We're talking about healthcare access and cost here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The complexity and cost of healthcare is a concern for people straight across the country. A recent survey of public employees in Wisconsin finds many don't understand their policies, and most would have a hard time coming up with money for a medical emergency. And that's just one of the issues we're looking at in this discussion. Do you think Wisconsin should expand Medicaid with the federal funding available? How is healthcare in your community? What policies do you think we should consider for Wisconsin? Join in at 800-642-1234. Joanna Beilman-Doolin is the research director for the group One Wisconsin Now. Joanna, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, thank you so much for having me.
And Corey Peterson is here as well. She's a writer and research associate for the group Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Corey, welcome to you.
Thank you, Kate. I'm happy to be here.
So we've watched this headbutting among lawmakers at the Capitol over Medicaid. States have the option to expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, giving them access to federal funding. And former Governor Walker opted out of that option. Governor Tony Evers would like to opt in. Joanna, first to you, why do you think the Medicaid expansion would be beneficial to Wisconsin?
Well, first and foremost, accepting the Medicaid expansion dollars simply has huge benefits for the state of Wisconsin. It would provide more affordable, quality health care coverage for 82,000 people here in the state. It would save the state of Wisconsin more than $300 million just this biennium that could be reinvested in other programs to help eliminate health disparities and address the really real healthcare issues facing our state. Furthermore, it would leverage federal dollars to the tune of $1.6 billion with those programs that could address really significant healthcare issues here in the state. Beyond that, however, simply put, 70% of the people of the state of Wisconsin support accepting the Medicaid expansion dollars. The people are very consistent on this issue, and the support for accepting these dollars simply continues to grow.
Corey, 70% saying they want this. What is your perspective on the Medicaid expansion option? Do we need it?
I would say we don't need it. And my two reasons for that are primarily the access to quality care and the fact that Democrats have been arguing that it's going to save the state money. It may save the state money in the very short term. In the long term, it's actually going to cost the state money. So the Democratic debate has focused on the 80,000 childless adults at 100 to 138% of the poverty level. And actually 50% of these people actually qualify right now for highly subsidized insurance through the Obamacare exchanges. So there is insurance available to these people, but they haven't chosen not to enroll. And so by taking people who have chosen not to enroll on the exchanges and putting them on Medicaid, this will actually cost the state money in the long run.
How so?
Because Medicaid expansion is actually partially funded by the state of Wisconsin. It's going to have to be partially funded by the state of Wisconsin, whereas the Obamacare exchanges are actually fully funded at the federal level. The other benefit to the exchanges is that this is private insurance. And with private insurance, people have access to better doctors. Often with Medicaid, because of their lower reimbursement rates, they can't see certain doctors.
So Governor Evers' budget, Joanna, relies a lot on the ability to access this federal funding to free up this revenue. And let's listen to him at the beginning of the month.
Medicaid expansion is the lever that we will pull so that we can make these investments. The budget would bring $1.6 billion, as been stated before, in new federal funding to make historic advancements in health and well-being of every Wisconsinite.
Joanna, in hindsight, was this a risky strategy for the governor to put so much on this Medicaid expansion funding?
Well, I would return to the really widespread support that Medicaid expansion funding, that accepting those funds, has across the state. Public opinion has increased in terms of support for this, and it really would reinvest in really, again, targeted, needed ways. Governor Evers' budget includes $28 million investment in the Healthy Women, Healthy Babies program, which is really important. Studies have shown just this month, in fact, the Health Policy Institute at Georgetown University released a study showing that accepting the Medicaid expansion funds led to decreased maternal mortality rates in states that accepted, led to decreased infant mortality rates, which is really hugely important here in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, we as a state face a Black infant mortality crisis. Wisconsin is the highest rate of Black infant mortality in the entire country. You know, and furthermore, in terms of riskiness, 37 other states across the country, including our neighbors here in the Midwest, including Michigan, Indiana, Iowa, Minnesota, have accepted the Medicaid expansion dollars. This is hardly politically risky. This is simply a matter of whether ideology will win out or whether the health of Wisconsinites will win out.
We're having a healthcare discussion with Joanna Beilman-Doolin. She's research director for One Wisconsin Now. Corey Peterson here as well, writer and research associate for Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Your voice as well, 800-642-1234. How has health coverage affected your medical decisions? Have you waited to see a doctor or made different choices based on insurance coverage? Join in with your story. How is healthcare in your community and what policies do you think we should consider for Wisconsin? Call in. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. So, Corey, as Joanna was saying there, Wisconsin is one of 13 states that did not accept the federal money for Medicaid. Wouldn't more federal dollars give Wisconsin more freedom to use state revenue on other priorities?
I think an important thing to highlight here is that after Obamacare, the full implementation of Obamacare failed, healthcare now looks very different in every state. So the states that Joanna just listed that have benefited from Medicaid expansion have very different situations they're looking at than Wisconsin. So in Wisconsin, currently, we have close to a 0% coverage gap. So a lot of people have access to insurance in Wisconsin. And so when Governor Evers frames the debate as free money to the state and all these people who have no coverage currently who will be put on Medicaid, the people who don't have coverage have coverage available to them. They're choosing to opt out of it. So adding all this, I mean, Medicaid expansion, as I said earlier, will cost our state money. It's not free money. It will cost Wisconsin money in the end. And so right now, keeping those people on the Obamacare exchanges and encouraging people to join the exchanges. Recent data from Kaiser shows that 57% of Wisconsinites have insurance through their employer currently, and 6% use the exchanges. So we would like to focus on getting more people onto exchanges into private insurance options where we think they will have better access to care. And this will actually save the state money because this is funded at the federal level.
Do you see, Corey, there's room for compromise here with lawmakers?
I actually don't think there is room for compromise on the Medicaid expansion part, just because the issue, I mean, there's either the Medicaid's going to expansion and we're going to accept it or we're not going to accept it. So I don't really think there's room for us to kind of accept it half-heartedly.
No gray area. We're talking healthcare in Wisconsin, two perspectives at the table. Corey Peterson, a writer and research associate for Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, and Joanna Beilman-Doolin, research director for One Wisconsin Now. You have a voice in this discussion at 800-642-1234. How is healthcare doing in your community? What policies do you think we should consider for Wisconsin? And what about national healthcare policy? What do you think about Medicare for All, single payer, and other proposals being discussed by presidential candidates? Call in, tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this healthcare discussion in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at healthcare cost and access here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. One piece of this conversation is Medicaid for All. About a month ago, Congress held its first ever hearing on Medicaid for All. One of the people who testified was Adi Barkan. He has ALS, that's a neurological disease with no cure, and he delivered his testimony before Congress using text-to-voice technology because his diaphragm no longer allows him to speak.
I am hopeful because right now, there is a mass movement of people from all over this country rising up. Nurses, doctors, patients, caregivers, family members, we are all insisting that there is a better way to structure our society, a better way to care for one another.
What do you think about Medicare for All, single payer, and the other proposals being discussed? What questions do you have about these different healthcare policies and delivery systems? We're at 800-642-1234. Joanna Beilman-Doolin is Research Director for One Wisconsin Now, and Corey Peterson is a Research Associate for Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. So as we talk about Medicare for All, there is this debate around it goes further than the public option that would allow Americans to be insured under one government-run health insurance system. So, Joanna, would a Medicare for All type system be something that Wisconsin should get into?
Well, I think in terms of healthcare, you know, policy and the different systems that are available out there, you know, when it comes to healthcare, you know, people will do what they need to do to make sure that they and themselves, their families can be healthy. You know, here in the state right now, the issue really focused in front of us is, as we were talking about before, whether to accept the Medicaid expansion dollars to address the real needs here in the state. You know, as these discussions continue, you're right, they play out on the state level and on the national level. And I think, you know, the issues about how do we access the medical care that is critical to our healthy families and healthy communities really is going to be an important one going forward.
Corey, what is your take on Medicare for All?
So Medicare for All, I would say that that's also something that we shouldn't pursue. But here in the state of Wisconsin, I said previously that Medicaid expansion is something that I don't see a compromise on. However, there are several other healthcare ideas I do think we could find common ground on. Recently, at the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, we put out a healthcare brief discussing several different ideas that we could see find common ground on and collaborate on. So some of those include direct primary care, where people could pay a doctor a certain amount of money for the month and see a physician for their family. And we're talking like $125 a month, so very low cost. A dental therapy license, which is something that Evers voiced support for in the past. So these are another thing that has bipartisan support is minimum markup. And that's minimum markup for prescription drugs, repealing that. Evers has voiced support for repealing minimum markup in other areas, not currently prescription drugs, but this would allow access to low-cost drugs, generic options for people at their local pharmacies.
And Mike in Independence has insights on that. Mike, go ahead. Hi.
Good morning. How are we doing today?
Doing well. What are your thoughts here?
Well, I have a bunch of disagreements here. I do not agree one bit that 70% of Wisconsinites are for adding that Medicare to for all. Number two,
Medicaid expansion. Go ahead.
The expansion. Yep. Number two, I think that everything got screwed up when Obamacare was passed. You couldn't keep your doctor, and all that was meant for was to bankrupt the country. The insurance companies and hospitals all jacked up prices on everything. You can't even get an EpiPen for what, $500-$600 with insurance.
Well, let's get Joanna to weigh in here. What do we see in terms of healthcare cost, Joanna?
Well, I am so glad that you brought up that question. There actually have been some studies recently that show that accepting the Medicaid expansion funds from the federal government would actually, help lower individual health insurance market rates by, anywhere from 7 to 11%. And again, accepting these dollars would draw down other federal dollars that could be reinvested to address some of these critical health care, gaps. In terms of Governor Evers' budget proposal, he would expand the dementia care specialist program across the state. His proposal would provide $43 million for increased access to dental care. Some of these, different components of healthcare that when they are affecting you and your family just make such a huge amount of difference and face families and communities all across the state. Another aspect of accepting these dollars and, moving forward is that it would help to treat the opioid crisis, which we hear so much about and see the really devastating effects of across the state. So, there really is an incredible moment for opportunity to, reinvest in the different programs across the state and issues across the state that are really crucial for our health and success going forward.
Let's bring in Jeremy in Racine to the conversation. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My concerns are how are we going to be able to pay for this? I know that the federal government is going to kick in a little portion, but Wisconsin is going to have to kick in their portion of it. And we have a retiring population, an aging population that's going to be jumping onto the healthcare system, the social Medicare, Medicaid. These expenses are going to get higher and higher in the next decade to come, and it's going to be already a burden as it is. Increasing these costs is going to put a huge financial strain on the taxpayers that are paying for it, and you're not going to get a better quality healthcare product. You're going to get the same thing, which is higher costs for everybody. So my concern is, why don't we open up the market so that we can compete with other markets within the area? Start driving down prices for healthcare as it is for the private sector, because I just can't see us being able to pay for all this. It's going to get really expensive, and most countries that already have social medicine, the numbers are increasing that they're transitioning over into private sector healthcare coverage.
Yeah, Jeremy, thank you for the call. Corey, first to you, what about opening up the marketplace more and making it more competitive?
Jeremy, I completely agree with what you just said. And yes, opening up the marketplace, I think, is a way to lower prices for sure. So that includes the marketplace in our state and hopefully across state borders as well. Just giving people access to lower cost plans. But I also think we can increase access and to the quality of affordable care through things like short-term limited duration plans. This was something that was available at the federal level under Obamacare, were limited to 3 months. So they were kind of just very brief plans you can be on. But since Trump has become president, they have been expanded to 3 years, and you have an option of renewing these plans. And what this has opened up a new option for probably young, healthy people would be the ones who would be most interested in one of these plans. But they're at 90% lower cost, and they have lower coverage. That is true. But a lot of these people who have purchased STLDs, 80% have, according to an e-health study in February, 80% who bought STLDs knew that they were buying a plan that had lower coverage. They were just looking for an affordable plan. So in Wisconsin currently, we still only allow STDs or STLDs for 3 months. However, I would be behind expanding that to the federal level of 3 years and for allowing people to renew after that.
Joanna, what do you hear on these ideas and the insights there that we're going to have a lot of retirees here in Wisconsin and straight across the country who need Medicare?
Sure. Well, I would, first point to the $1.1 billion that Wisconsin has lost since just 2014 by not accepting these Medicaid dollars. And, again, having a variety of options is, a component of this. And certainly if you're a younger, healthy person, you may not need as much intensive healthcare and at the moment. But again, I would return to some particular issues facing Wisconsin, both in terms of the aging population, but also, again, you know, Wisconsin has the highest rate of Black infant mortality, and some of these issues that are really just alarming. And we need to be doing a better job at addressing those. And those issues aren't ones that are necessarily going to be solved by a short-term insurance plan, but, you know, need to be considered at this community statewide level that Governor Evers' budget proposal with the Medicaid expansion does. You know, when it comes down to it, this comes down to, you know, the ideology that a person has, ideology that some of our elected officials have, and whether they're going to prioritize that over the health of their constituents.
Joanna, thank you for joining us. Joanna Beilman-Doolin is Research Director for One Wisconsin Now. Corey, thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Corey Peterson is a writer and research associate for the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. Coming up, federal prosecutors charged a former Milwaukee alderman with wire fraud earlier this month, claiming he took $30,000 in exchange for votes favoring a strip club. We'll talk with a reporter about the case. That's after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at charges in a Milwaukee strip club bribery scheme. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Federal prosecutors charged a former Milwaukee alderman with wire fraud earlier this month, claiming he took $30,000 in exchange for votes to license a strip club. So we're looking at this case, and we're going to step back to look at the battle over strip clubs in Milwaukee over the years. What do you think about Silk Exotic's new strip clubs in downtown Milwaukee and the city's efforts to block them for years? How much control should the government have over where businesses can set up shop? Should there be tighter rules for strip clubs? We're at 800-642-1234. Mary Spicuzza is an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Mary, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So let's start with these recent criminal charges. Silk Exotic opened its first strip club in downtown Milwaukee last year, its second club this month, after a lot of legal fights over the years with the city. Can you give us an overview of what this battle is about? What were the city and Silk Exotic fighting about?
Sure. So Silk had been trying for years, Silk and some of its owners, I should say, had been trying for years to open a strip club in downtown Milwaukee. There was a lot of resistance about the effect it would have on downtown development. There were concerns about that it would lead to human trafficking and violence against women. Some of the alders, most notably probably Alderman Bob Donovan, who represents much of downtown, were very opposed to Silk opening a location. The battle was fought in federal court as well, several groups filed lawsuits, and actually one of the LLCs tied to Silk won about $1 million. So the club opening happened after that lawsuit, where I think the city decided it wanted to cut its losses and not suffer any more losses because a lot more lawsuits were being filed. And I think they were having visions of writing like millions of dollars worth of checks to strip clubs that hadn't opened just because of being sued in court.
So did Silk Exotic argue its business was being treated unfairly compared to other businesses trying to set up shop?
It did. Yeah, their attorney basically said for free speech, First Amendment rights, you can't police, you know, if our owners don't have criminal records and if there aren't concerns with our businesses, that essentially you can't just block a business if it's trying to open in a properly zoned area because of what that business does.
So how have the two sides come to a resolution?
So what happened was back in 2017, city officials and Silk representatives and other strip club owners all decided to come to an agreement which said that the city would agree to grant these licenses to Silk Exotic to open downtown, and strip club owners and their LLCs would in turn drop lawsuits that they had filed against the city. So basically all a bunch of different owners signed agreements saying they would not sue. And then the Common Council came together and approved licenses for what is now Silk Exotic on Old World 3rd Street in downtown Milwaukee. But obviously, as we can tell from the charges against former Alderman Willie Wade, that is more the kind of the end of one chapter and the beginning of another.
And we're going to get to this next chapter in just a moment. But how common are these kind of license battles between businesses and a city?
You know, a lot of licenses, it's a very contentious process. It's a very competitive process. People definitely, you know, fight very hard for licenses. This one was a bit unusual because Silk argued that they had not had problems with their businesses, and it was really more of a issue with what they did.
We're talking.
But I think it's probably more common than we realize about these, you know, kind of behind the scenes fights.
We're talking with Mary Spicuzza. She's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and looking at the fight to get strip clubs in downtown Milwaukee and lawsuits and the city's pushback on that. Do you have strip clubs in your community? Where do you think is the appropriate place for them? Should they have the same opportunities as other entertainment businesses? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Mary, moving to this news from earlier this month, federal prosecutors charging former Milwaukee Alderman Willie Wade with fraud, and they say he took $30,000 in cash from an informant in exchange for votes to help Silk Exotic. What have you learned so far about the prosecution's case against Wade?
It's an unusual case. He was not in office at the time. He was no longer an alderman. He was actually leading Employ Milwaukee, which is a major workforce development jobs training initiative that's run out of Milwaukee. He is basically accused of meeting with this informant on multiple occasions and saying that he could convince the man who took his seat on the Common Council to vote in favor of their license in exchange for cash. That is the allegation against him. They apparently, the informant was wearing a wire for virtually all of their meetings. I think it malfunctioned on one meeting. But it sounds like they have, I believe in court, they said they had about 47 discs or recordings, video recordings, surveillance, that sort of thing. I think some of that is, you know, footage like from multiple locations if there's a surveillance camera. So, but it does certainly sound like they were documenting this along the way and that they are ready to present their case, charging him with three counts of wire fraud.
And so it is Alderman Khalif Rainey who is the seat being held formerly by Willie Wade. Is that right?
Right. And prosecutors were very clear to say when they released the indictment that that Alderman Rainey did not know and was not part of this. I think they were there was an interesting federal search warrant that was unsealed briefly, apparently accidentally, that it was a little less clear. I think that maybe prosecutors at one point thought maybe he was involved, but they were very clear at that when the indictment was released that he was not part of this. He did not know and did not know that Wade was promising to deliver his vote in exchange for this cash. And it was very odd. He met him in, you know, parking lots around the city, parking lots in the suburbs. Sometimes one would get into one's car or the other car and they would drive around. So it certainly sounds like it will be an interesting case to watch if it goes through the courts, unless there's some sort of plea agreement.
And Willie Wade actually was asking this informant, you know, how much is this license worth? And then it started at a smaller dollar amount and then escalated to more toward $30,000. What was going on there?
Well, that's the allegation. They say that basically he agreed to one price and then increased the price and was saying some of it was for
Alderman Rainey. Some of it was for him. It appears from prosecutors' case that they are accusing him of actually trying to take all of it and, you know, not being part of it, not being involved with Rainey. But licenses can be, I think that they are valuable to the license holder. Obviously, because of it, Silk seems to make a lot of money at their locations. And I think that they really wanted to open. Now, if they're opening a second location, I do not know how much money they make at their first one, but you have to assume that they're making pretty good money to be fighting to open opening a second one so soon after the first downtown.
Mary, has Milwaukee changed how it handles these license applications because of the ongoing legal fights with Silk Exotic?
The second one was a much faster and much easier process. That said, it was a very different process because they were taking over the location of Arts Performing Center, which was a pre-existing club. So in that case, there's where it's more of a transfer, like a transfer of ownership or transfer of license, it's a lot different threshold. So that process was very, I would say, quick and painless for Silk, but part of that was because the nature of the transfer. So we haven't really seen what would happen if yet another group tried to open a club in downtown Milwaukee, and we'll certainly be watching for that. So I guess it's maybe a little early to say how it's changed them, but I do have to think that they will be cautious about, you know, going into an expensive legal battle with another group like this, because it did cost the city quite a bit of money.
Has, you know, Silk Exotic is one strip club chain. Have others had, you know, similar difficulties in the licensing process?
You know, I have not been around Milwaukee long enough to know or remember what it was like when, you know, Arts Performing Center opened years ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm not entirely sure, but I do know, you know, in Silk's presentation, when they were trying to open, they were saying that other cities have clubs like this in downtown, near downtown, that they don't have a lot of problems, that they're, you know, not necessarily magnets for crime. Certainly, some of the recent charges that were unveiled against a former Silk co-owner raise a lot of questions about crimes at strip clubs and what some of the effects of that can be. And that was not happening at this location, but that was at another location that had been owned by Radomir Buzdem, who until recently was a co-owner of Silk.
We're talking about the strip club chain Silk Exotic and the issue over strip clubs in downtown Milwaukee and the licensing process. Mary Spacuzza has been covering this issue. She's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And you can join in this discussion at 800-642-1234. Do you have strip clubs in your city, in your community? Where do you think is the appropriate place for them to be? Should they have the same opportunities as other entertainment businesses? Do you live in Milwaukee? What was your reaction to the criminal charges filed against former Alderman Willie Wade? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can go ahead and tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about fraud and a Milwaukee strip club. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The head of the Milwaukee County Workforce Development Agency, who is on administrative leave without pay, Willie Wade, is charged with wire fraud, and prosecutors say he accepted $30,000, falsely claiming he was negotiating on behalf of a Milwaukee alderman. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. Do you live in Milwaukee or in the area? What was your reaction to the criminal charges filed against former Alderman Willie Wade? What questions do you have about this case or about strip club regulations across Wisconsin? Call in. You can also tweet us at WPR Mornings. Mary Spacuzza is an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and she stays with us. Let's go to the phones now with Marcus joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus. What are your thoughts on this?
So I have never been to a strip club. I don't personally support strip clubs. That being said, I think that if the city of Milwaukee is going to allow strip clubs in towards downtown, I think it's better to have it in a more visible area so that it can actually be controlled, policed, and enforced as necessary for the laws to avoid human trafficking or other type offenses that could possibly occur if it was pushed towards seedier parts of town.
Marcus, thanks for the call. Mary, what do we know about location and whether you cluster strip clubs together in a single location?
I think that the recent case involving Radomir Bozdum, who had been a co-owner of Silk, does raise questions about the location. He owned one, and there was another one in Dodge County that seems like it was a bit off the beaten path, and that it did sound like it was kind of, from what the victims described, kind of the Wild West in there, where there was not a lot of there was maybe not a lot of police presence, you know, smaller police force. It does sound like the Dodge County sheriffs were a key part in this human trafficking investigation that was able to, you know, charge him eventually. But it does kind of make you wonder if someplace is more in the middle of nowhere, what goes on there, I guess. If that makes sense.
Yeah, and you reported the case isn't the first federal investigation involving Silk Exotic. Two of the company's former co-owners were linked to other recent investigations. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about those cases?
Right. So John Ferraro, who had been tied to Silk and had been a co-owner of some locations, my colleague stumbled upon a federal search warrant involving him, gosh, several years ago, and we worked on that story where it was this case out of California that had started apparently as a kind of racketeering case into what they thought was a group with Russian mob ties, and it had been dubbed Russian Laundry. And he ended up, there was a very interesting warrant that talked about cell phone records. He disputed that at the time, and the case had been kind of put back under seal, but we did write about that, and then he was bought out of Silk. Then we had Radomir Bozdum more recently, who had some search warrants and was actually confirmed to me that federal agents did raid his home, his businesses earlier this year. And that appears to be part of a human trafficking investigation that two people have been indicted in so far. Mr. Bozdum has not been indicted in that case at this point, and we don't know whether he will be. But Christopher Childs and a woman named Jennifer Campbell have been charged with sex trafficking involving force, fraud, or coercion, which is basically to say that he was forcing women dancers at the club to prostitute for him. And then Jennifer Campbell was charged with conspiracy to engage in trafficking.
Mary, what has the company said about those cases? Anything?
Yeah, the company issued a statement after we first reported on this case, saying that they were essentially horrified by the charges, that they were buying Mr. Bozdum out of their location, that he would not be an owner in the downtown or a co-owner of the downtown location anymore, and said that they were committed to combating trafficking. So they clearly very promptly tried to distance themselves from him and from that case shortly after we first reported on it. And they did correctly point out that this case, nowhere in the search warrants the downtown location was never raided. It was never investigated directly as part of this case. It was these Dodge County clubs.
So who runs the company now?
So it is now has a several co-owners. They often, a lot of clubs will have a LLC own them, but there are several owners, including some of the original owners of the downtown location, Scott Cron, Joe Modell,
Craig Pless, hopefully I'm not mispronouncing his last name. So those gentlemen are still involved. And then it looks like when they bought out Radimir Buzdom that a couple of other LLCs have small ownership. So sometimes it's kind of funny because it's you see who owns it and it's an LLC and you don't necessarily know who all of the owners of that LLC are. And if you look at like state records, you can find out who the registered agent is. But in this case, we have a pretty good sense, but in some businesses it can be hard to tell who all owns what.
We're talking with Mary Spacuzza. She's an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel looking at Silk Exotic and their Milwaukee strip clubs. So Mary, circling back now to where we started this conversation and, you know, with the situation around the former alderman, Willie Wade, and did the Common Council end up approving Silk Exotic's license after we learned of these alleged payments? And how close was the vote?
So, you know, funny you ask, because he had met with a man, with this informant several times right before this licenses committee meeting. And then it actually stalled at that meeting. And it looked like at one point that he gave the $10,000 back and said, you know, basically we'll meet again after the vote. So apparently he allegedly actually gave $10,000 back before collecting the full $30,000. But it did eventually pass both the licenses committee and the full council. And it was actually not a close vote after all that fighting. It was the deal was approved 10-5. So of the 15, 10 voted in favor of it. That said, there were some who, you know, I would say were reluctant supporters who at least publicly said that they were more concerned about kind of stopping the stopping all the money, stopping all the lawsuits. The city's losses versus necessarily being big fans of Silk.
So how has Willie Wade or his attorneys responded to the criminal charges?
They were in court. They issued a statement promptly after we first reported on this, saying that they would be fighting the charges. He had a initial court appearance where they formally entered their not guilty pleas for all three charges. And they have said that they are planning on fighting this and that he was aware that they were looking into this for apparently about a year and had been talking with federal prosecutors and said they were disappointed that they had pressed charges or had filed charges. But last we heard, he plans to fight this in court.
So you've been covering Silk Exotic's legal fights for years, with the company now having two clubs downtown. What are you watching for next in this?
I think that we'll be watching for any kind of police reports or anything indicating that there are trafficking concerns at those locations. While the Common Council can't block groups based on, you know, what they do if they're zoned appropriately, they could if there were crimes being committed there or criminal charges against either the owners or just crimes occurring at that location. So that would certainly give the council an in to try to, kind of crack down on them. We have not seen a lot of crimes being committed there. I'm sure we would hear about it if something was happening, but it really does sound like it's been a fairly innocuous location in that we're not seeing, you know, we haven't heard of shootings, fights, anything like that. And they have said that they have security and that they are trying to run a pretty tight ship downtown. But
Mary,
we'll be watching for that.
Mary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Mary Spacuzza is an investigative reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, talking about the charges against a former Milwaukee alderman in a case linked to Milwaukee strip clubs. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.